Business Minds, a presentation of the Texas Business Journals. Brought to you by Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies build a stronger, safer Texas. In this episode, Dallas Business Journal Managing Editor Rob Schneider is joined by Tyler Technologies CEO Lynn Moore, who is leading his company's Connected Communities initiative to streamline and share government data and, in the process, benefit the public.
Lynn Moore has been CEO of Tyler Technologies since 2018. He began his career with Tyler as general counsel in 1998. The Plano-based billion-dollar public company provides technology solutions for government schools. We're going to talk to Lynn today about the company's extraordinary growth, a blockbuster recent acquisition, and lessons learned over the past year. Welcome, Lynn.
Thanks. Good to see you, Rob.
So you've been with the company, as I just said, for 20 plus years. You started as general counsel, and then you became president in 2017 and then CEO in 2018. Why do you think you've had such a long and successful career at Tyler?
That's a good question. I guess, Rob, if you would have told me in 1998 that I'd still be at Tyler in 2021, I'd probably shake my head a little bit. But I consider myself really fortunate and really lucky. There's a lot of people who work real hard and do a lot of good things. And to have landed at a place like Tyler, again, just really fortunate. You and I have talked before about how in the early days of Tyler, you know, things weren't so great. We certainly had some rough patches or times when our stock was a dollar. You know, we were literally on the verge of bankruptcy. And I just happened to be around at that time when a lot of key decisions were being made. And it was an opportunity for me to sort of gain the trust of a lot of the senior leaders, which has helped me have the role that I've had here at Tyler over the years. But I think the reason that I've stayed so long is really just I love working here. You know, I love what Tyler does. I love the team. I'm really fortunate to work with some really great people. One of the things I say often is, you know, there's only two things in my life I've done more than 20 something years, and that's be a father to my son and a son to my parents. And Tyler's like family to me now. And, you know, we got a lot of great people who come to work every day, not because they have to, but because they want to. And that's just a great place to be.
That's great. Tyler Technology recently announced its biggest acquisition in its history with a $2.3 billion deal for Kansas-based NIC. The deal took 4 months to come together. Can you talk about how the conversation started and how it all came together?
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting story. And as you can imagine, Rob, I mean, two public companies getting together doesn't happen every day. And so while the conversations with NIC started 4 months ago, internal conversations started well before that. Actually, NIC, we've known of NIC for a long time. They went public in 99. We kind of entered the space in 98. So we've known of each other over the years. But really, it was early last summer. Some guys came together and sort of talked to me about the idea. And the timing kind of seemed right. But, you know, you don't just approach a public company sort of haphazardly. I mean, we had to do a lot of work. As I said, you don't just call another CEO and sort of have, you know, high level discussions unless you know you're serious. And so I talked with my team. I said, pitch me on the deal. They did. They came back and I said, OK, dive deeper, learn everything we can about this company, because when I make this call, I want to be sure that we're in. And, you know, I called Harry Harrington, their CEO, which was late September, kind of out of the blue. He was totally taken off guard. They were not for sale. And really, we just struck up a conversation and really just tried to get to know each other first and really spent about 6 weeks, 8 weeks just talking about our companies, talking about our cultures. We never even talked about valuation until well down the road. It was more, hey, do we see this as a fit? Because to me, that was one of the most important things in an acquisition is whether there's a cultural fit.
So Tyler Tech has had a lot of acquisitions through the years, but never to this scale. Why was this deal different?
Well, you just said it. I mean, and I just said a minute ago, I mean, a public company to public company deal is something that, you know, maybe once in a lifetime happens. Clearly their size and scale. We've never done a deal with a company this large. They're bringing over $400 million in revenues, almost 1,000 employees. That's a big deal. Also, what they do and what we do is truly complementary. There was really no overlap in our businesses, very minor. And you know, that's not always the case in deals. Is, you know, they're really the true leader in the state public sector space, and we're really the true leader at the local public sector space. So it was really a good complementary fit.
So you said earlier, as you just said, it's complementary. NIC does state well, and Tyler Tech has a strength in local governments. So what will this deal allow you and give you scale to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's actually one that I posed to our management team last summer when I said, pitch me on the deal. And it's not just what can they bring to Tyler, but what can we bring to their business? And, you know, what they've done successfully is they're the leader in the state government, really interacting with citizens, making citizen services more accessible, things like applying for unemployment insurance, things like submitting business filings, renewing licensing, secure online payments. And what they've done successfully is they go out and they get these state enterprise-wide contracts, which are really like hunting licenses that allows the state agencies to procure products. Well, Tyler's got a lot of vertical solutions that we think we can utilize in those contracts and help them sell more products and services at the state level. The states also provide vehicles through these contracts where the local jurisdictions can purchase some of our software and services without going out to an RFP. So it sort of shortcuts that. I think strategically, one of the big things is they're the leader in the United States in terms of payments business, collecting payments on behalf of the state agencies. This is something that's somewhat new to Tyler's. It's a new strategic initiative for us. I think we're doing about $2 to $3 billion in payments a year. They are north of $20 billion in running payments through their systems. And with recent contracts with the state of Florida, that'll go north of $50 billion. So I think together we'll be able to really line up well in our payments business. We'll learn some stuff from them and we'll be able to get some of their payment activities at the local level.
So as the pandemic hit in 2020, your second quarter earnings declined as businesses, people were sheltered in place and at home. But your third quarter saw a return to growth. What led to such a quick rebound back to growth?
Yeah, you know, Rob, last year was certainly a unique year. And the second quarter hit all businesses, as you said. And that was a new experience for us. We've enjoyed pretty good growth over the last 20 plus years. I think when you see, you know, overall, our growth last year was about 2 to 3%, which was well below our expectations for the year, and understandably so. But we still grew, and that was a positive. And I think what it does is it really speaks to the nature of what we do and the stability and resiliency of our market. You know, all we do is we serve the public sector, as you know. We provide all the essential services in the public sector. And those things are needed in good times and bad. I mean, the local government's public sector doesn't shut down just because of COVID. They still have to do things for their cities. They got to run their budgets. They got to fix that. They got to pay their cops. They got to do all the things that we help them do. We've talked before how our market is almost somewhat resilient to economic stress. It's not totally isolated from it, but it just shows the strength and stability of our market and the fact that over 70% of our revenues are recurring revenues.
So later in 2020, you had a ransomware attack on your network that caused a $4 million hit to revenue. What were the most important lessons learned from that experience, and how will it make Tyler a better company going forward?
Yet another good question. And, you know, you're right. The ransomware attack only highlighted more of the challenges of 2020. It was certainly a stressful year. I think any leader would tell you that, you know, in today's world, it's really not a matter of if, but when. And I think the lessons learned is you just always have to be prepared. You always have to be vigilant. And, you know, we've seen it in our clients. You probably read more and more articles of ransomware attacks at cities and counties. And obviously in COVID too, ransomware attacks increased significantly during COVID as people were working from home and they're not necessarily got the same protections. I think we traditionally do a pretty good job with security. But first and foremost, you know, it's got to be a mindset. It's got to be a mindset for every employee that security's got to be top of mind. And you know, when you've got over 5,000 employees like we do, that's a constant reminder that you have to do. So, you know, we previously to that, we did training. We've enhanced our training. We do more software tools to protect things. You do some structural things. So if something comes in, breaches will sort of be more constrained and not get out. But, you know, you're constantly fighting a moving target in this world. As soon as the latest software comes out to help you prevent this stuff, the bad guys are out there trying to figure out ways to get around it. And so you're just constantly evolving, constantly focusing. And again, it's just be as vigilant as you can and be as prepared as you can.
We were just speaking before we started recording about sheltering in place and how a big of a scale with 5,000 employees in so many different locations that was for Tyler. What were the biggest technology lessons your company learned when the pandemic hit about a year ago?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, there are a couple things there, Rob. I'd say for our overall market, you and I've talked before about how the public sector market is a little bit slow and lags a little bit behind the commercial sector. And I think what you've seen is for our end users, a further acceleration of the virtual world. That was something that was already coming, more acceptance of cloud-based services. When you look then specifically at our business itself, Tyler Within, you know, it was really an opportunity to take a look at how you historically did things. one thing I talk about with our leadership team is, you know, successful people, successful organizations, they're always looking internally. They're always looking for ways to evolve and ways to improve. And while we do a lot of that at Tyler, 2020 sort of forced some of that on us. And we learned to become more efficient. An example is one of the things that you stopped is what we call non-essential travel. Well, one of the first questions I had was, well, if it's non-essential, why are we doing it to begin with? And so you come out of that and you start looking at the way you do some of the things, and maybe people don't need to get on planes so much for meetings, and maybe we do more Zoom calls. Our delivery of services, you know, we had to evolve and learn how to deliver our services to our clients, because, as we said, our clients don't shut down. They still need us, but be able to do it virtually and remotely as opposed to sending people on site. So, you know, we've learned a lot of lessons on how to become more efficient, and hopefully we'll continue to apply those in the future.
So you told me in the past, when you're looking at a good M&A target, that you look at the portfolio and you look at what you do and what that company does and if those mesh well. But you also say, or really as important or maybe more important, is figuring out if that company's culture will fit with yours. What are the types of things you are doing to find out about the company you are looking to acquire's culture? And what makes a company a good fit versus a bad fit? I know you say you turn down a lot of deals for this reason too as well.
Yeah, we talk about culture a lot at Tyler, and you're right. To me, cultural fit and alignment, it's one of the most important things in a deal. I just mentioned NIC. We saw that sort of alignment. Culture, it's a little bit hard to define. It's one of those things that you know it when you see it. And so really, part of what you got to do is you spend a lot of time with the leaders of the company beforehand. You try to get to know them personally. In the instance of NIC, you know, obviously being a public company, I was able to do a lot of research, get on their website, look at what they have posted for their values, understand their leaders, how he thinks. And, you know, at Tyler, we talk about the three legs of the stool, which are your employees, your shareholders, and your clients, and how you treat those people and how you place importance on those. Tyler now is a big company, but we still have that small company feel, that entrepreneurial spirit. And we look for those things in deals that we do. And we like to bring on people who sort of fit our mold. Again, it's hard to define, but it's one of those things, you just know it when you see it. One of the things I say at Tyler is everybody knows the org chart, but you don't feel the org chart. That's kind of our culture. We're very team oriented, very open door oriented. And you sense that when you sit in meeting rooms, and you sense not just with the leaders, but their senior team. And you just kind of get that gut feel. It's probably one of the best ways I can describe it.
Are there telltale signs to you when a company isn't a good fit?
You know, when companies have been founded by entrepreneurs and you see their excitement and passion for what they do, and it's not just about making money, but it's about improving the lives of their employees, improving the lives of their clients, you know that's a good fit. When you're dealing with companies that have been traded a few times and they're in the hands of private equity or financial buyers, they're going to make some investments, but at the end of the day, they're looking to sell that company and they're looking to make that financial statement look as good as it can. We've talked before, deals are a lot more than spreadsheets and banker books. And so, again, you kind of know it when you see it. You want to see that passion for what they're trying to do, not just with their employees, but within in the markets and their clients and hopefully improve the lives of others.
That's great. So tell me how you and your organization make tough decisions.
So we're, as I just mentioned, you know, Tyler, we're very team oriented. And that's one of the hallmarks of Tyler. And that's what makes it so fun to come here. We talked about being here 20 years. It's because we're all part of the team. And I truly trust everyone on my senior management team. I'm fortunate to feel like I'm surrounded by very, very talented people. When there are major decisions or major events like COVID, we'll actually form little task forces of senior leaders and have representatives of different parts of the organization. If it's more of a singular decision, I'll bring in the group and I want to hear what they want to say. I think we talked before a few years ago. I tend to be more reflective. I like to sit in the room, but I like to hear other people talk. I like to hear them debate. You've got good people around you for a reason, so listen to them. And that's what I do. And it's not making decisions by collectiveness. It's not like, okay, five people like this and three not, we're going at it. But it's more just let's get interactive and let's hear what people have to say and then making the judgment call.
Do you find that takes longer to do that or around the same time?
You know, everybody's got their own style. I don't know that it necessarily takes longer. It, by me saying I tend to be more reflective, doesn't mean I need a week to make a decision. I just like to hear everything, take it in, and then make a decision. So, yeah.
When we last spoke a couple of years ago, you were just starting into a connected communities initiative at Tyler Tech. How's that evolved over the past few years?
Yeah, I'm actually glad you asked that because it's one of the things that we're really proud of at Tyler. It's one of the things that we think we're uniquely positioned to do. And let me just start by saying, you know, what is connected communities? And to us, a lot of people think the public sector operates in a certain way that's more connected than it really is. And really, the public sector operates very much in silos. Agencies don't really connect. They don't really share data. And so our vision for connected communities is really it's connecting different agencies within a jurisdiction. So, for example, connecting like a permitting license with the appraiser's office. So when a guy goes down and gets a new building permit, the appraiser's office knows, hey, something's going on here. We need to be paying attention. Or public safety with the courts. It's also connecting similar agencies across multiple jurisdictions. So where one public safety agency in Carrollton, for example, is connected with the public safety agency in Dallas and they share information. It's also connecting citizens with the public sector so that the citizens are more engaged. So I'd say over the last couple of years since we spoke, you know, that's our vision. That vision hasn't changed. It really hasn't evolved. I just say we continue to execute on it. We've done some acquisitions, I think, that help that. We did an acquisition around a company called Socrata, which is our data and insights. Data is a key part of connected communities. It's getting data sharing between these agencies so they can make better decisions. So that's a big change since we last spoke. And I think the NIC acquisition is the same way. Evolving into the state space actually allows us to expand and expand that vision, not just at the local level, but even more at the state level.
Lynn Moore joining Dallas Business Journal Managing Editor Rob Schneider. In our next segment, Moore shares his company's approach to the cloud. When Texas Business Minds continues.
I'm Rich Gergasco, President and CEO of Texas Mutual Insurance Company. To everyone who has been hard at work providing the things we need during this crisis, we say thank you. You truly are essential and we're proud to be on the job with you. More at texasmutual.com/on the job.
Continuing our conversation on Texas Business Minds as Tyler Technologies CEO Lynn Moore joins Dallas Business Journal Managing Editor Rob Schneider.
Tyler, for a long time, said it was cloud agnostic in its approach to software, but that philosophy's changed over the past few years as really technology in the business world has changed as well. Was there a certain moment that changed your thinking on that?
Yeah, and you know, if you look historically, our cloud agnostic approach served us really well, and really what that meant was we were able to deliver our software both on an on-premise version or we could host it in the Tyler cloud. And you know, as we talked before about how local government had sort of lags a little bit behind the commercial sector, they were still just as accepting on having on-prem versus not. And so historically, we wanted to offer both to make sure that we captured the customer. We wanted to make sure we could excel at both. I don't know that I'd say there was a specific defining moment per se, but there has been a shift in our business model over the last several years, whereas 5-7 years ago, maybe 20-25% of our new business was in the cloud. And today it's probably closer to 55-60%. We see what's going on with COVID. That's even accelerating more. We're seeing a lot of our new deals this year, more and more going to the cloud. I think for me personally, it was, we know where the future was going. We know in the long run where technology is taking us. And we've spent 20 years building, becoming a leader in this public sector space. And instead of just being more reactive to the market, I saw this really as an opportunity for us to help lead the public sector to the cloud because the cloud's really their future. And you look at things like data, the importance of data, and you look at our connected communities vision, those are only really possible through the cloud to fully realize that. So for us to realize our vision, we knew that we had to start leading the public sector into the direction where it was going to go inevitably.
So 2020 became diversity, equity, and inclusion became top of mind for the business community. How important is diverse and inclusive workforce to your company's success? And how do you keep that at the forefront coming out of the pandemic?
You're exactly right, Rob. I mean, again, another challenging part of 2020 was some of the social unrest and the riots last summer, and certainly brought it even more to top of mind. To answer your question in the short version, diversity and inclusion is very important. It's very important to Tyler. It's very important to me. It's very important to our leadership team. I personally believe that you can't achieve your fullest potential without diversity of thought, without diversity of views. You know, I talked earlier about my senior management team. That's part of that is you want to get diverse. You want to hear different opinions and different views. We all have different backgrounds. We all have different perspectives and we all bring something to the table. And that's important. And it's important to hear those voices. before the pandemic, we had actually started some of our own internal diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives. Those were still in the early stages, but we had started some of that. And then obviously last summer, that got ramped up a bit. Some of the things that we're doing internally is one, some of our systems, and being able to talk about the importance of data and learning, getting data internally is very important. Data on things like pay and equity and gender and race, and looking at our employee base in terms of demographics, and looking at the applications that come in and what are the demographics there, and then those applications that make it to an interview phase, an interview to an offer phase, and tracking those. So some of that is just trying to learn more about yourself and make sure, you know, we like to think we do a pretty good job, but you gotta do the data, and we've invested in that, and we're taking the time to do that. I think the other thing that we've done is and again, we're still in the early stages, is really giving our employees a voice and forums to express their opinions. And so we've got diversity and equity inclusion initiatives that are company-wide, but also more locally. As you said, we've got offices all around the country, and some of this stuff, it's easier in smaller groups, and providing forums for really safe forums for discussions are things that we're starting to do. And it's something that's been very well received by our employees.
So how has the public sector changed in the past 5 years?
Yeah, so from a technology standpoint, it lags. It's not necessarily always looking for the latest and greatest, the newest technology. You know, the new iPhone comes out with that cool camera. We go out and buy it, but that's not what our folks, our friends in the public sector need to do. What they're looking for is they're looking for dependability. They're looking for reliability. They're looking for stability. The people that we serve, these are people who really want to help the public. They want to make a difference. They want to change the world. They want to feel like they're a part of that. And that really hasn't changed. What has changed is the way they're using technology to approach it. I said they're moving to the cloud faster. They're more acceptance of the cloud. Budgets are always going to get tighter. They're learning to do more with less. And they realize that their constituents are changing. As the population grows, you look at kids today and how they view technology and how they use technology, their expectations for how the public sector is going to serve them are going to be pretty demanding. And so the public sector is going to have to change the way they deliver their services to their constituents. And that's something that we're helping them do.
So what new public sectors or industries are you targeting for future growth?
Well, that's a good question. That's something investors ask a lot. In our traditional markets, we still have a lot of runway. There's still more products that we can buy. We've talked before about our white space initiative, whereas we look at our portfolio of products and we see where we're leaders in certain spaces and in areas where maybe we haven't invested as much and maybe it's not a leading product. And those things become either internal builds or potential acquisitions. I think when you look at the business that we're in right now, you look at this NIC acquisition. I mean, we just spent, we close it in a week and a half. We're about to spend $2.3 billion. That's obviously a big growth initiative for us is to move bigger into that state space as well as the federal space, which has, again, not been a historical focus for Tyler. I think you look at payment processing services for these public sector. That's a very big strategic initiative for us, and it's an initiative for NIC. And I think you're going to see us really try to make a push to become the leader nationally there.
So what's the best advice you'd give to new CEOs?
That's a good question. I wish someone sat down and gave me the advice. But
what do you wish they said to you?
I'd say, you know, it's funny. You probably talk with a lot of CEOs, and you know, we're all different, right? We all approach things differently. We all have different personalities. I'd probably echo what I said earlier, which is really surround yourself with talented people. Embrace diversity of views, embrace diversity of opinions. Be open and willing for people to challenge you. Don't surround yourself with the quote, yes men. Really listen to your people. You know, and also I'd say, stay humble. Don't ever lose sight of the fact that while you may be CEO, it really takes an entire organization to do great things. You got to really always appreciate what you have around you, how hard people work for you, how dedicated they are, and really treat them well. I've always thought that you judge a person's character by how they treat the people that work for them, and in particular when nobody else sees. And I think when you treat your people well and take care of them, they'll be really loyal to you and really work hard for you. And to me, it's a big part of Tyler's success.
So, as we said earlier, you've been with the company for 20 plus years. You've seen this company go from a $25 million company revenue-wise to $1 billion and growing. What has stayed the same at Tyler since your first year, and what has changed the most?
Yeah, it's hard to say that everything's the same, right? Because you can't be the same at 25 million and approaching, you know, we'll be about this year with the NIC will be over 1.6 billion. I guess what I'd say the same is we've talked a little bit earlier, our culture, our mission. One of the things, initiatives I pushed for and we're about to unveil company-wide is sort of this company-wide mission, vision, values, which really wasn't a reinvention of Tyler, but more just codifying who we are and who we've been over the last 20 years. So that as we continue to grow, we don't lose that. And, you know, our mission of empowering the public sector to create smarter, safer, and stronger communities, our core values, things like integrity and focus and inclusion, community, accountability, those things really haven't changed. Those are still the same. Even though we're larger, like I said, that entrepreneurial spirit, that fight for every deal, keeping that small company feel to the best we can, even though, you know, we're now an S&P 500 company, which it's hard to believe. What's changed? You know, I'd say one thing that hasn't changed, obviously, is who we are. I'd like to say that nothing's changed. We're the same. That's certainly just not true. As you grow, you get bigger. You have to do certain things differently. But I think one thing that's changed is from our growth, it's our role in the public sector. You know, when you're just one of many competitors and you're just in one certain space, you know, now we're the leader across all major functionality of government. And we can do things that we couldn't do before. Our connected communities vision is something that couldn't have even thought of 20 years ago. And the fact that we've spent 20 years growing and building this market leading company allows us to be more of a strategic partner for the public sector and really be their partner to help take them and help them do things in the future that otherwise wouldn't have been possible. And that's exciting.
So finally, can you tell me something that you were able to do personally during the pandemic that you've always wanted to do or hadn't had time to do in a long time?
You know, I was listening to the local radio show, The Ticket, a couple of weeks ago, and they had Troy Aikman on there, and he was doing, I think, for an NFL playoff game or something. And Troy talked about how, you know, some people in the pandemic decided they were going to become in the best shape of their lives, and some people were just not going to worry about it. And I don't have some story that said, I'm going to lose 10 pounds and I'm going to run a 5-minute mile. That's not really what happened. I think for me, really, it was really more, just, it was pretty simple. It was just the ability to spend more time with family. I really learned how much time I spend every day commuting, how much time I spend almost wasted. And it was really more just a back to the basics. And you sort of live simpler, right? You weren't going out, you weren't doing anything. And life was really simple. And just the ability to spend time with your family, appreciate what you have, and really appreciate time because you found yourself with time that you didn't always have. And it just gave me a new appreciation. So, no, I can't say I had some big goal that I went and accomplished, but it was really a time that made me, I think, feel even a little more grounded and a little more settled.
Well, that's great. Well, I thank you for your time today, Lynn. I really appreciate your insights, and thank you very much.
Rob, I appreciate it. Always welcome.
And thanks again to Tyler Technologies CEO Lynn Moore for joining us. And thank you for downloading Texas Business Minds, presented by the Texas Business Journals and brought to you by Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping companies build a stronger, safer Texas.